All right. Leonard Carr is here. He's a clinical psychologist and a teacher. And Leonard, I think you were meant to be here at 8. What the hell? I mean, really, you know, let's get some discipline here.
Well, ask Eskom.
Oh, is it
the
Eskom?
Whole of Yeovil Observatory area is...
Leonard, I don't like people who make excuses.
Speak to Eskom.
Don't blame Eskom. You sound like the president who blames apartheid.
Seriously, the traffic was terrible.
All right, now I believe you. So, listen, we've actually met before,
a
long time ago. It's nice to see you again. We've only got a little bit of time here, but I thought it would be fun to check in with you. You're a psychotherapist, an organizational development consultant, expert witness, and a coach.
Yes.
Am I right on all of those?
Yes.
And you've been really busy. I mean, you say some interesting things. You've got very interesting observations about people.
Thank you.
Because I suppose what it is that makes you you is that you're curious about how people think and how they behave.
That's right.
And if you had to walk into this room, a complete outside observer, and you had to look at the way that these people here interact, that one, this one,
right?
How would you assess this as a healthy environment?
Well, I'd call it a dynamic environment, a very alive environment.
All right.
A little scary. You get reprimanded as you walk in.
As you walk in, first thing.
We're on time and we get shot at that.
I'm a bit of a disciplinarian. But I thought there were a couple of issues that had come up on the show recently that maybe I could discuss with you. So first of all, now, having children is an interesting discussion.
Right.
Because there's a lot of... kind of society's default position is that you should get married and have children.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, out of all of us here, the only one who has children is Damon.
Right.
He's got one child.
Right.
I don't know that I ever will. Mub says she doesn't want kids. Ben?
I don't really want children.
Doesn't really want kids.
No, thanks.
Flax probably has kids that he doesn't know about. Mm. What do you think? Is this healthy? Is this right?
Well, I think it's a legitimate choice.
Is it a growing trend, though, do you think?
I think it is a growing trend because I think that people are finding more and more self-actualization through their careers.
Ah.
And I think in times where people weren't doing such demanding, interesting careers, let's say like before the Industrial Revolution, family was central and whatever you did, you really did to support the family.
Right.
You didn't do it for your own growth and your own self-actualization. I think today, number one, there's the self-actualization element. Number two, the world's become a small place and travel and adventure and all kinds of things have become possible. And a lot of people prefer to explore the world and to live an adventurous life and to not be tied down by family because at the end of the day, family requires tremendous sacrifice.
It does, and it's a very time-consuming thing. And really, if you are going to be, for example, a parent or a loving husband or wife, you really have to put those people first.
Right.
To
do it well requires a tremendous amount of investment and sacrifice.
Right. It can't be an add-on.
No.
It can't be an accessory.
No. Because, you know, if you make it an add-on and an accessory, the amount of energy and attention you'll have to put in just to try to deal with all the arguments and eventual breakdown of the family.
Right.
Is also... you know, going to detract from whatever other things you wanted to do in life.
Now, when you do a therapy session with somebody, one of your clients, they come in. Do they actually lie on a sofa? How does it work?
I see you're quite cynical about it.
No, not at all. I think therapy is a very good thing. I think if more people in South Africa went for regular therapy, we'd have less violence in society.
Absolutely.
We'd have people understanding themselves, what motivates them. They'd be able to figure out why they react badly to things, because we do as a nation, we react very badly.
Absolutely. I always say that the people who go for therapy are the friends, family, and employees of the people who really should be in therapy.
Right.
So, well, I don't generally put people on a couch, but sometimes people have difficulty speaking, or sometimes people want to speak about dreams or things that require them going more into their inner world and not being tied up in the social interaction of sitting eyeball to eyeball.
Right.
And in that case, you know, reclining actually is very facilitative.
Okay.
It's very nice actually to talk to someone with your feet up in your head.
You don't feel tempted to fall asleep though, because has that ever happened to you, that you're busy with a client and then they actually fall asleep?
In hypnotherapy, they can fall asleep, but not otherwise.
But that's probably quite healthy if they fall asleep during hypnotherapy. It means they're that relaxed.
Yeah, exactly.
Except there's no use to you. You can't talk to them.
That's right. But I don't think people generally fall asleep because I think generally I keep them on their toes.
Do you think, though, as a nation, we're kind of traumatized? I mean, there seems to me to be a lot of... And people don't want to approach the psychological. It's too scary for many people to actually come face to face with who you are and the good and the bad together.
I think that people don't realize how tense we are as a nation until they start to travel. You know, if you go to other places and you see people living normal lives, you know, women on their own walking around at 3 o'clock in the morning in a city.
Yes, but those are hookers in Amsterdam.
No. I'm saying, you know, even in, you know, New York City, people feel generally very safe.
Right.
And people having deliveries left outside their houses and not worried when they come home after a three-day holiday, the delivery from Amazon or whatever it is still sitting there.
It's waiting at their front door.
Yeah. And people leaving cars running in parking lots because they're just running into a shop. They want to keep the air con on, whatever it is. So I think we've become habituated to the high levels of tension, to being flooded by incredibly traumatic stories constantly in the newspapers, on Facebook.
Sure.
People keep putting these videos of hijackings and all of that.
And beheadings in the Middle East and all kinds of horrible
all
things.
All of that. Yeah. We're absolutely saturated with violence, so much so that people are desensitized to it. People can watch a beheading and not be moved by it, which in itself is a very frightening thought. And then, as it is, we live in an aggressive, very patriarchal society.
Yes.
And we also live in a very self-critical society, because another thing you see when you travel, let's say, to New York, is that people are just as badly behaved in traffic. They also go through robots and cut you off. The service in the shops is just as bad.
Yeah.
And a lot of complaints and issues that people have about South Africa, about service and traffic and all of that, are actually worldwide in big cities. So we also hard on ourselves to add on to our other woes. And so I think that people are very, very uptight. And notwithstanding all of that, South Africans are generally nice, warm people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a...
It's almost a bit of a paradox.
It's a paradox, yeah.
Tell me, Leonard, what do you think the main reasons for people to be so stressed out and so unhappy are? I mean, we look around us, okay, we've got the violence and the news that we've been talking about now, but divorce is a very big thing, and obviously there are more and more of these happening. A lot of people who start off, everything's cool, eventually at some point in the relationship it deteriorates. It's hard enough to make the decision to go through a divorce and then to actually go through it.
Right.
That's probably a big factor in some people's unhappiness. Relationships generally?
Well, I think the Western model of marriage has a built-in divorce factor. Can't possibly not end up in divorce. For the simple reason that it starts on a fallacy. And the fallacy is that if you love each other enough, if there's enough emotional content, and you spend enough on the wedding, then everything will just evolve from there. You know, that's like putting a business together on the basis that, well, I like you, so I'll make you my business partner. We'll throw a big opening, you know, and put lots of flowers and everything. We'll go way over our budget, and the business should really evolve from there. So sometimes couples come and talk to me, and they ask me about their relationship, and they're deciding to get married, and I say to them, if I was an investor and you've just presented a business plan to me, would you think I'd put 1 cent to it?
That's such a good way of looking at it. But don't they say, oh, but that's so cruel and cold and calculated?
Sometimes they do. But if people understand that marriage cannot be anything other than a tension-filled, ambivalent relationship, because you've got two people with different needs, different aspirations, different values, different responses to things, different tastes, different libidos, different sleeping habits.
Right.
And you've got to try and hitch these two people together and make it work, which means that you've got to work very hard to create the good, and you've got to have very good relationship management skills to manage the negative, which is always going to be there. And most importantly, what holds it together are values like respect, loyalty, devotion, which sound Victorian in today's day and age, because people are out for themselves. You know, no one wants to make a space for someone else and realize that to make someone else happy means putting your own needs aside a lot of the time.
Yeah, for example, I don't want to do that.
It's better to be honest about it than to pretend and break someone's heart.
Well, that's it. You don't hurt people that way, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you've just made it sound like so much hard work. And a lot of us, you know, we want this disillusion that it's all roses and it's, you know, butterflies flying around and we skip on the grass and hold hands and it's all sweet and cute.
For a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, that's how you get seduced into choosing to marry someone.
Mm.
You know, I think all of that romance is just, you know, God's way of tricking people into getting married, because if people knew up front and really saw what it was about, no one would do it, you know. But at the end of the day, it is very, very hard work.
Mm.
And one's got to have an overarching reason for it. And if your reason is to get your own needs met, you're doomed to fail. If your reason is that you realize that you're going to grow through this, you're going to grow other people through this, and you're prepared to do it as a project, and it is a project,
sure,
and put yourself aside knowing that you're risking a lot of unhappiness. People get ill. People change. You can't, even if all the factors are perfect in the beginning, over time, many, many things change. And so you have to have some big vision of why you're doing this and what makes all the sacrifice worth it. And obviously that, you know, for me, the answer to that is that you choose someone, not who you love, who you're mad about, who you're hot for.
Yeah.
You choose someone who's worth investing in, someone who you value and admire. And you think, here's another human being who I think has the potential to be a greater human being. And I'm prepared to support them in their growth, whatever that takes. It's an investment.
A lot of people say they don't want to die alone. Is that a good enough reason to want to end up with someone? I don't want to be alone. A lot of people are very afraid of being alone.
Yes. Well, I think that, first of all, what that points to is that people don't have a relationship with themselves. Because, you know, if you need someone to be holding your hand, because that's a metaphor. When they say, I don't want to die alone, they're really saying, I don't want to live alone.
Mm. That's it.
Which means that they don't really have a relationship with themselves. And if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, if you don't feel complete within yourself, you're going to be needy and demanding in a relationship with another. So the first step to creating a healthy relationship is to creating a healthy relationship with yourself, to be more whole and complete within yourself so that you can be a giver, not a taker. Because two taking, needy, broken people, when you put them together, it doesn't make one whole person. It makes one whole broken, needy, empty relationship. And when you take two healthy, whole, mature people together, you get a healthy, whole relationship.
Right. And shouldn't you be trying to figure yourself out and sorting yourself out and at least coming to terms with who you are and being happy with who you are before
Absolutely.
You impose yourself on some other person?
Exactly.
I've often seen that happen. I'll see friends of mine and they'll get together with someone because they think that that person can complete them. And it's exactly Absolutely. What you were saying now.
They make the big mistake of thinking that if you were okay, then you'd see that I was perfect. You know, it's like children's logic. The whole fight started when he hit me back. You know, people don't take responsibility for what they bring to the relationship.
What do you think the biggest problem is with people in relationships, young people in South Africa now, as opposed to like what relationships used to be like for our parents? What's the major difference now?
I think the major difference is that oftentimes our parents got married for kind of survival reasons. There was a more pragmatic aspect to it. They weren't putting such an emphasis on romance and fulfilling selfish needs.
Okay.
Maybe to
it's
a
more
fault.
Like you needed shelter or something.
Exactly. You know, often it was after the war and people chose spouses out of survival. And a lot of people just lived together miserable because their parents had the attitude that if you weren't getting beaten, then you just have to make it work, you know?
And
today we're living in a Dr. Phil, Oprah kind of era where people's visions for how things can be are very idealistic. And, we're living in an age of such plenty and so many opportunities that people don't want to have to make the sacrifice and compromise. They want it all.
They don't want to cut down on their options.
Exactly.
They want to keep those options as open as possible.
Exactly. So you've got to somehow find a middle ground between not just marrying anyone and being miserable and not trying to keep all your options open and having unrealistic expectations. It's somewhere in the middle. It's not going to be perfect and rosy as you like, but it's not going to be as miserable as some of the people in the previous generations.
Well, listen, I really do want to keep talking to you. Can you come in again one morning when we've got some more time? I'd love to get into this, and we'll actually do a little bit of live therapy for the whole country. We need it.
Of course.
Look how we don't even know. Most South Africans, we read such horrible things in the news every day. We don't know whether we're good, bad, or ugly. And we, as you said earlier, we're hard on ourselves too.
Absolutely.
If you could give everybody in traffic this morning one thing to feel good about, one thing that'll make them feel a little bit happier, is there anything you could think of?
Absolutely. I think every person needs to realize that you have something unique and special to offer the world. You might not know what it is. It's your responsibility to find out what it is. And until you know what it is, it's your responsibility to live as if you knew what it was. So go out into your life with the knowledge that you've got something special and important and unique to give to the world and start giving it.
I thought you just said don't crash into the car in front of you, but that's good too. Let's go to Michael. Michael, hello.
Morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to comment on the sort of treating your relationship like a business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I couldn't agree more. It's how my wife and I treat every decision, be it an alteration, be it the choice to have a child. We sit down, we have a 5-year spreadsheet that whenever we make a decision, we see what impact it'll take, how long it'll take to pay off this decision. And our fights are very rare because there's facts in front of us. And what the doc is saying is I couldn't agree with him more. If you focus on a relationship like a business, it's much more successful. Because
there we go.
There's no arguing. The numbers don't lie.
So what is your spreadsheet say for sex tonight? Does it look like it's going to happen?
Unfortunately, the spreadsheet says no because she's pregnant. And she's
congratulations. All right, man.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, very informative. I'm enjoying the show. Keep it up.
All right, dude. Thank you very much. Nice to hear from you, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Leonard, thank you so much for coming
in. Pleasure.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Leonard is a clinical psychologist and a teacher. He's someone who wants to, and I want to talk to you about the great thinkers. I want to talk to you about Socrates and about Plato and about Nietzsche and about all of these people, and we get into the headspace and evolve the conversation a little bit.
Sure.
So next time we'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leonard. I hope we can give you some substandard coffee in the meantime, and you can hang around a little bit longer.
Thank you.